You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by the Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York, partnering with Grow NYC to make farm fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets. For more information, visit christmastreesny.org.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I have a really nice show today, and I'm really excited about it. And I also have some little damage control I need to do right now. So let me start off by saying that we are actually talking to Zeke Freeman of Bee Raw Honey, not really raw honey. So I love that product too. However, that's not who I'm talking to today. So I apologize about the updates. We're still talking bees and honey. It's the same thing. It's just a different company. So that being said, Zeke, I'm really sorry about that. I'm so mortified.
I apologize for not having your microphone on. So we're, you know, there we go.
Oh, it's all good, babe. It's that was my engineer David chiming in, so everything's good. So Zeke, thank you so much for coming out here today to beautiful Roberta's in lovely downtown Bushwick, Brooklyn.
I love Bushwick.
Bushwick's cool, man. It's really is. I kind of want to move here now.
I was walking around a little bit this afternoon. And it's just like, oh, I am not cool enough to live here or work here. I don't know.
I know, right? Awesome. I thought I was super cool living in Red Hook, but apparently I'm not cool enough. I need to get to Bushwick now. So
clearly,
we'll see what happens with that. But so we're talking about your honeys. We're talking about bees today. I got to tell you, the packaging on the Bee Raw Honey is gorgeous. Really, really sophisticated. Really, really beautiful. And there's a whole bunch of varieties. I'm sitting here looking at five different kinds right now. So let's talk about these different kinds of honey. Like, how did you do this? What are these?
Yeah, so what we focus on is what we call single floral source honey or single varietal honey. So our beekeepers actually take their bees and they place them in a wild raspberry patch. Or they place them in an orange grove or a buckwheat field.
Cool.
And the bees collect nectar from that specific floral source, and they take it home and they make honey from it. And that changes everything, the color, the texture, the flavor, all that goodness you see in front of you.
Really, because, I mean, I'm looking at some that are like a light cream color all the way through. Like, there's some that are opaque. There's some that are translucent to this beautiful, beautiful, almost like golden coppery bronze. And it's amazing because it's just the different flower, right?
It's completely a different flower.
That's
all the
crazy.
All the bees are the same. Honey is basically a little bit of sugar and a little bit of water, but
the
end of the day, it boils down to the nectar source.
So this, I have to ask you this because this is a question that a lot of people have asked me in the past. I usually get like a creamy variety honey, and they're cream colored and opaque. It almost looks like some kind of like a skin cream or like a makeup or something like
sure.
that. What's the story with that? Why is that opaque?
So we don't do anything to our honeys, so
okay.
Our honeys crystallize as they will.
Oh, cool.
And that's just, we consider that part of the benefit of the product.
Totally.
So, you know, you could buy it at one part of the year and it'll be totally liquid and amber colored, and later in the year it's going to look crystallized. And
we
consider that one that shows to the customer that it is a completely unprocessed product. We haven't filtered it. We haven't cooked it. We haven't done anything to it processing-wise. But two, it's just interesting how, you know, just like when you open a bottle of wine and the first glass isn't the same as the last glass.
Totally.
The same is true with honey. As it crystallizes, the texture changes, the flavor changes. I personally like them when they're crystallized because they melt on your tongue a little bit slower. You don't get that straight up sweetness. You get all those nuances and those interesting flavors that are really hidden by most liquid honeys.
So like, let's say your bees are doing raspberry and then, you know, they come back and they do buckwheat. Do you know if there's like any nutritional difference in those?
For the bees?
For the bees, I guess, and for the consumer.
So for the consumer, there's very minute differences.
Okay.
Like buckwheat honey, buckwheat in general is high in iron. And mm-hmm. that's why you get that that color,
darkening,
right, is iron oxide, just like when you cut an artichoke and it starts to darken. That's all the iron in the artichoke darkening, and it's what gives it that bitter flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So the same is true of our buckwheat honey, which is the really dark one in front of you, and that's iron oxide, and it gives it kind of a molassesy characteristic and a little bit of bitterness to it. But the actual iron content mm-hmm. in the honey is pretty minor.
Okay.
It's pretty minor.
Okay.
I think the real health difference that, you know, makes a difference to a customer is that it's an unprocessed sugar.
Yeah.
You know, low glycemic value actually is a good energy source that, you know, kind of crescendos very slowly. It's mm-hmm. kind of not a big up and down like your white processed sugar.
Totally.
But otherwise, it's sugar.
And it's funny because it's like people don't really understand that, you know, it's
right.
like, I mean, for me, honey is like this magical elixir. I mean, I love it. And I go through probably a pound jar, probably about once a month. I hate to admit. Yeah, no, I eat a ton of the stuff. It's like kind of disturbing.
But it's a great energy source. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. You just have to realize at the end of the day, it's sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to balance that out with everything else.
Well, I'm a total sugar junkie, so for me, it's just like, you know, breakfast. It's terrible. I have to stop doing this. But no, it's just the varieties and stuff. I wish you guys could see this, and I'm going to make sure there's a picture on the website because they really, it's amazing to see how different they are when the process is really just the same. So where are all your bees?
So. We work with beekeepers who are where the floral source is.
Oh, cool.
So it's all about, you know, for us, it's all about working with beekeepers, finding beekeepers who are in places that have interesting floral sources.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a fabulous beekeeper in Maine who has access to wild raspberries and wild blueberries.
Oh, cool.
We have somebody in Washington State who does buckwheat honey. And so what we focus on is places that have really great either wild floral sources
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, on public lands or whatever, and you have completely a wild floral source, or places that have interesting organic floral sources.
Oh, cool.
So like our orange blossom honey, for example, is from, you know, conventional produce, but it's organic produce. So that's, you know, as best we can get to getting as pure as possible, you know, devoid of any pesticides, fungicides, miticides, anything that has to do with, you know, modern agriculture.
Okay. So then here's the question for like the quote unquote lesser honeys at supermarkets and stuff. I'm assuming they're not using anything organic. So I'm assuming that product is going to have residue of pesticides and all this nasty stuff in it.
You know, I can only imagine, there's definitely been some testing done out there that's been pretty damning. But, you know, the worst thing about the grocery store, the honey bear.
Oh, my God. What's in that?
Honey bear. It's Chinese honey and it's Argentinian honey. And who knows what the floral source is, because very often they micro filter this stuff. So you can't actually test via the pollen what the floral source is or where it came from, its origin. So it's who knows what it is, frankly.
That's scary.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the scariest part really is that it just doesn't taste like anything and you're being charged a lot of money for something that isn't very good. But in terms of health, they're actually microfiltering out anything that has any nutritional benefit anyway, and anything that would probably be, you know, bad for you.
Yeah.
So it's probably pretty just sterile. And ends up being more like a traditional sugar that doesn't really taste like much but sweet. And that's the thing I always get from people who, like, they're like, I don't like honey. I'm like, well, try this.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
They're like, oh, I had no idea.
It's true. And it's, I mean, the thing was, there was a couple articles a few years ago, I don't know if you know anything about this or not, where there were all these articles in like health blogs and stuff saying that the honey coming from China wasn't honey. And is it because they couldn't find the plant source?
So in addition to microfiltering, the other reason for doing that is so that they can mix in other syrups, corn syrup, things like that.
God.
You know, cheap sugars to, you know, bulk it out and make it cheaper. So part of that microfiltering covers up the fact if there's no pollen in there, then they can't say, oh, well, there's this corn syrup in there. So it's
clever. I'll tell you that. It's very sneaky.
You know, it's just ugly business.
It is ugly business. And this is the thing, you know, this is one of the reasons why when Greg told me about you from Cutting the Curd, who was supposed to be here today, but sadly had some kind of emergency with the cheese world, so he could not make it. But we were talking about this and, you know, talking about like small batch and being part of Heritage Foods, where everything is small batch and like they really, really check everything and they know the history of everything they sell. To see something like this product that is so clean and so pure and genuine, it's a blessing to see it. And it's for me, I'm just like, oh, thank God, finally, you know, because it's
well,
like,
I'm
so, seriously, I'm so sick and tired of like crappy food posing as something else, you
right.
know, and like with honey, I use honey in my practice. For a lot, actually, from like burns, cuts, doing the whole topical thing.
Sure, absolutely.
To the natural antibiotics in it.
Right.
You know, and it's such a great, great elixir with all these amazing things in it. And most people, you know, they just take it just for the sweetness of it. But it's actually, it's really, really good for building up your immune system, too.
Yep.
And I think that's really important, and I think the bees deserve a lot of credit for this. So about your bees, or regarding the bees, so they're all small hives and small beekeepers, and I'm assuming you guys meet these guys and, you know, check
their
practices.
Yeah, so we have close relationships, and, you know, part of what we do is, you know, really kind of helping our beekeepers work together and kind of create best practices.
Oh, cool.
So that's, you know, part of the organic floral source, the wild floral source, you know, how to, you know, get as far away from possible to from agri, you know, kind mm-hmm. of common agriculture, corn or what have you. But yeah, so really, you know, the bulk of what we do though is really focusing on getting them into good floral source locations
cool.
where the bees are safe, the bees are healthy, they're away from the pesticides, the honey, you know, doesn't get any pesticides in it.
Nice.
You know, all of that's really important to us. So, you know, in terms of finding our beekeepers, it's really a word of mouth thing. You know, the beekeeping community is pretty small and mm-hmm. tight knit. And so, you know, when I'm looking for somebody, you know, my beekeepers will say, oh, well, you know, call this guy over there. And,
oh, cool.
you know, we call them and we try to, you know, make a, you know, just kind of create a relationship. And that's what it's, you know, as much about it as anything.
True.
And then the beekeepers we work with, we work very closely with them. Some make a lot of honey. Mm-hmm. Some don't make very much honey at all. I mean, we have, you know, one beekeeper who only makes one honey for us. It's called Meadow Foam Honey. It's mm-hmm. this amazing. Actually, they use meadow foam seeds in cosmetics. It makes an oil that is well renowned, huh. supposedly in cosmetics. But it makes this unbelievable honey, and he makes like 5 barrels of this stuff a year.
Oh wow!
And gives me 2.
Oh wow!
And that's on the very small side. And then, you know, we have like our sweet yellow clover honey, which is that really white one in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a particular type of clover, but grows all over the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah.
And the key to that is like, okay, finding the location that's away from other kind of agriculture stuff, but he makes a ton of honey.
Wow.
So, you know, some of them are bigger than others. You know, some of them have, you know, a couple hundred hives. Some
mm-hmm.
of them have 50 hives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, you know, finding the guys who are willing to, you know, focus on that best practice.
Nice. Nice. And the thing about honey, too, and I may be wrong on this, but like the few honey people that I've met and beekeepers seem to be so involved in it and are so they're so educated and like they really know what they're doing. I've yet to meet like someone who's been doing this for a while who's like, well, I don't know. You know, it's like they really, really the commitment is there. And the love of the bees are there and the care is there. And I find it so exceptional, especially in food processing. You know?
Yeah. And I certainly have that experience with the beekeepers I work with. And, you know, it's really sad, you know, and I think we'll probably get into death of bees and pollen collapse and all of that stuff. But, you know, it's sad how much our agriculture system is the cause. Is the root evil of, you know, this whole issue.
Totally.
And the, you know, the beekeepers who have the big problems are the ones who are as much a cause to this problem as anything else.
There's irony for you,
right?
Oh my God. Well, on that note, I think we need to take a break. We're going to have our spitation identification. We will be back in about a minute and a half. I am talking to Zeke Freeman all about bee raw honey.
Ever wonder where your Christmas tree came from? Now you don't have to. New York State grown Christmas trees are now available in New York City. Trees grown on farms here in New York State are harvested just a few days before arrival to the city. Trees cut close to home stay fresh longer, and trees cut close to home travel less, which reduces fuel consumption of delivery vehicles. Did you know that buying a real tree helps to sustain agriculture in New York State by supporting local farmers and keeping important open space in agriculture production? The Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York is partnering with Grow NYC to make farm fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets in Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. So when you shop local this holiday season, you can include the tree in that list. For more information and a full list of locations, visit ChristmasTreesNY.org.
We are back. I am talking to Zeke Freeman all about bees and about his Honeyline Bee Raw Honey, which is some of the most beautiful stuff I've ever seen. These colors are spectacular. So we've been talking about like fun honey stuff, and it's time to get a little bit serious. You know, everyone's hearing about that the bees are dying, and if the bees died, no bees, no food. Is this legit at this point? Like, what is going on?
Well, I mean, look, bees are responsible for pollinating 30% of the food we eat. So
God,
that's a pretty big number.
That's scary.
Yeah. I mean, even so, blueberries, almonds, broccoli, peppers, squash, you know, all of these things either require or benefit greatly from the pollination of bees. Mm. So think about it. I mean, broccoli is probably the most available, least expensive vegetable,
yeah,
you know, at least in the United States.
Yeah.
And you imagine, like, all of a sudden, you know, there's half as many bees and broccoli prices go, you know, double.
Totally.
And we already have a nutrition problem in this country.
God,
I imagine if broccoli was 2-3 times the price. So it's pretty serious.
It is really that putting it that way, it is terrifying.
Right.
And so, like, are the populations declining annually?
So here's the deal. Here's the silver lining,
okay,
is that unlike a cow,
mm-hmm,
you know, say you lose half your cow population, it's going to take years to get that back,
mm-hmm,
right? Bees replicate, and it's just naturally what they do. So, you know, when you have a healthy hive, it grows to its maximum, and mm-hmm, then it naturally splits. So you've heard of swarms, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so swarming is when, like, a, you know, hive kind of gets too big for its britches,
okay,
and the queen takes off looking for bigger quarters. So you're actually, beekeepers actually have the ability with a healthy hive to grow it to a point and then actually split it, add a new queen, and then have two hives that will grow to full kind of sustainable source.
That's kind really of sustainable cool.
Place. So it is pretty amazing, but it also is a crutch.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So so on one hand, you know, you hear these numbers, you know, 30% of hives, you know, died off over a winter.
Yeah.
And that is devastating, and it's very expensive for beekeepers to then, you know, get those hives back because mm-hmm, it costs money to buy queens, it costs money to, you know, do the splits, it takes a lot of manual effort, et cetera, mm-hmm, et cetera. While, you know, we have these die-offs every year, the colonies aren't actually declining at this traumatic rate.
Okay.
They're actually being built up every year to a certain level.
Okay.
But it's extremely expensive for the industry and ends up being expensive for all of these crops that are pollinated as well, you know, because they are paying the beekeepers to come pollinate those crops.
Oh, wow.
So it does end up affecting the price of our, you know, all of our food.
And I mean, this is one of the reasons too that good honey is expensive, you know, I'm assuming, because it's definitely, you know, I've never seen like a jar of excellent honey for like 2-for-1 or, you know, $3 for this.
It's not going to happen. It
shouldn't be.
It's an extremely labor intensive work of love to make good honey.
And so with the beekeepers that you guys have, I mean, they're obviously very conscientious and really care about their bees and stuff. But at the end of the day, like, how damaging is this for bees? Is beekeeping, are honey collecting bad at the end of the day for bees?
No, honey collecting isn't bad at all. It's the pollination business that's bad. So
really?
this is what happens is agriculture today is all about yield,
mm-hmm,
right? Modern conventional agriculture. Let's not talk about heritage radio agriculture.
Yeah, please, no.
Modern conventional agriculture, growing blueberries, growing peppers, almonds are an enormous crop,
mm-hmm,
right? So what happens is a guy in Maine, for example, he'll be contracted by a farmer in California who grows almonds to bring his bees, physically put them on a truck them across the country to California to pollinate his almonds because there aren't enough bees in California to pollinate the almonds. And so with modern agriculture, it's all about getting the most blossoms pollinated to grow the most number of almonds on the least amount of acres.
Wow.
And so in this, you know, search, this grasp for yield per acre, they make sure that they plow every single bit of flora that's around the almonds. They make sure that the almonds get just the exact amount of water. And they make sure that every single flower gets pollinated.
Oh, my God.
So that they get the most almonds. So what will happen is this beekeeper will bring his bees out to California, put them on the ground a week or so before the blooms start blooming. Mm-hmm. There's no natural flora around for the bees to feed on.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine they've just been on a truck for a week.
Yeah, they're starving.
Right? They're starving. They're thirsty. There's no natural flora around. So what do they eat? They get fed sugar water.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So
great.
They're there for 7 days being fed sugar water. Then the blooms start happening. And part of this yield thing is making sure that everything, a single bloom, is pollinated.
Unreal.
So to do that, they actually will put 3 to 4 times as many bees are actually needed to be there. So there's more bees than there's actually food source for the bees.
God.
So they're fed more sugar water to sustain them. Then they'll sit there for another week being fed sugar water while, after the blooms are done before they're picked up. So you start with this bee that is malnourished.
Oh, God.
And you know what that does to the immune system.
Yeah, forget it.
So you have these immunosuppressed, malnourished bees that are then exposed to the bee's equivalent of the common cold or a little bit of pesticide or something like that. And that is the real reason that we have colony collapse disorders, because we're going around with these weakling bees that are malnourished and immunosuppressed.
I had no idea. And that makes so much more sense than just, because
pesticides have been around, right?
Forever.
It's not the pesticides aren't an issue. They clearly are.
Yeah.
They're there. But they've always been there. And so now a little dose of pesticides or the bee's equivalent of the common cold, and boom, your hives are dead.
You finally just explained this to me, where it's like, yes, I get it now. Because like you said, I mean, neonicotinoids are not a new pesticide. So it's like, why is this happening? And I mean, from my own just assumptions, I just assumed it was because of the amount of agriculture that we're doing and all that. But I didn't know that bees go on road trips for jobs. This is crazy.
It's pretty scary, right?
It's amazing. Right. I mean, it's just, I'm surprised that bees are that adaptable, that you can bring them somewhere new okay.
It is pretty phenomenal. I mean, they are a phenomenal creature. Their colonies are phenomenal. How they grow and build and work together is phenomenal. And it's pretty amazing how resilient they are.
Thank God, huh? How smart do you think the average bee is?
You know, I don't know about smarts. The how a colony works is extremely smart, but it's pretty robotic. You know, it's similar. It's similar to, ants marching, right?
Like
they have a programmed task, right? There are worker bees whose job is to go out there and scout for the nectar source. And they go out there and they scout and they find the nectar. They come back and they do this little thing called the waggle dance, where they dance around the hive, and they literally do this calculation against the sun and how far it is, and they tell within like meters the rest of the hive, like, okay, this is how far the nectar source is and how good it is.
Wow.
And then the hive goes into action, and then they just go back and forth collecting the nectar. Have you ever heard the term beeline?
Yeah. What's that about?
So the beeline is actually that line, that ant's marching line between the food source and the hive.
Oh, no way.
And so if you're a beekeeper, you actually avoid the beeline, because when there's a good flow, they're going back and forth and they're zipping. And so if you like walk into the beeline, you'll start getting hit by the bees because they just run into you. So that's why I say they're a bit robotic, but amazing. I mean, it's just amazing how their whole process works.
It's one of those things where, like, I've always had, like, this, I mean, you know, it's been argued that I'm a little weird. So, like, I've always wondered, like, what happens if you get, like, some, like, badass rebel bee who's in there who's like, I'm not doing it? Like, what happens then? But it just seems that, like, animals... And this is something I've learned from the show, doing it over the years, is that it really every animal on this planet has a specific job, including human beings.
Absolutely.
And the jobs are really what keep them going.
Yep.
You know, and the animals know their jobs way better than we do. That's for damn sure. And the, you know, it's, people will say, you know, it's what they do. It's ingrained. This is what a bee does.
Right.
But... honestly, I think it's more than that. You know, obviously, this is what they do. This is what they are genetically trained to do, or, you know, from generations and generations and generations, this is what we do. But it seems almost like, and this might just be my insanity, so please tell me if it is, but it's almost like, no, this is their job, but they know it, and that they do it almost out of because, not because they have to, but also because they want to.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that very much like, so the interesting thing about honey, right, is it's the original preserve.
Mm.
It is no different than your grandmother putting up cherries or green beans for winter.
Oh, wow.
Right? So nectar, which is, you know, the beautiful sugary liquid that's inside a flower,
yeah,
is the bee's food of choice. That's what they would eat every day if they could, mm, if they lived in Florida,
mm-hmm,
right? But the reality is they don't.
Yeah.
So honey is their preserve. It's their winter food. So they're taking that nectar, mm-hmm, and they're preserving it for winter. Right. So this is, oh, this, okay, is how they survive. This, I mean, so in a sense, you're right. But in a sense, this is what they do to, like, live every day.
So this,
and
is,
there are nectar sources they do and don't like.
Really?
For sure. Like, they don't like pollinating cranberries, for example.
Oh, funny.
It's like around water and stuff. Like, mm, they don't want to do that.
That's funny.
But they have, you know, the clover, which is very sweet and, you know, very, it makes a lot of it. They just swarm to it. It's pretty amazing.
That's so funny. And it's like something as well as like Manuka honey, which is that scary black stuff that comes from like New Zealand or Australia. That's intense. You know, it's the type of thing.
People
everyone
are into it, though.
Oh, my God. But people that don't know are
it.
Like, what's this? And yeah. It's like, blah! It's like, this, what is this stuff? You know, but in that kind of situation, too, where it's such a... extreme and it's so together and this is the only place that it is, you know, it's kind of amazing and I kind of love it just because it's like, you know, so many people know clover honey or like orange blossom honey and like the really typical ones, and then being able to get these crazy honeys from all over the world,
yeah,
you know, it's, yeah, like,
and that's why we do what we do, you know. And you know, I think that when people taste our orange blossom honey or our clover honey, they're like, wow, that's like really something different. It's not what I expect.
Mm-hmm.
But then having all the different, for, you know, floral sources like sourwood or basswood or meadow foam or buckwheat that are just out there and take your taste buds on just a total, you know, epic journey.
The names are so good.
It's really
too.
Fun.
I love it. It's like, it's just really, really cool. And it's also something that, you know, for people to see that, you know, it makes total sense. Why would a bee in Maine be producing the same honey as a bee in Florida?
That's right.
You know, it's the same as people. And I think that bees, when I was a kid, bees had a crappy reputation because everyone was afraid of being stung by them.
Everyone's,
you know,
still afraid of bees.
Really?
You'd be surprised how, you know, people are absolutely deathly afraid of bees. I mean, we do a lot of work around, you know, we have the Save the Bees Fund that, you know, funds research and education,
nice,
and that kind of stuff. And, you know, we do a lot of efforts around trying to, you know, coax people into, you know, not using, you know, pesticides,
yeah,
in their yards and things like that, or even trying to, you know, get people to have backyard. And people are deathly afraid of bees.
It's so funny.
It's really amazing. You know, people just can't, like... You know, it's kind of like when a dog runs up to you. You know, most people will kind of shy away, but and bees are just the same way. Like, you just chill out. It'll go away.
That's true. As long as you don't flip out, they're usually like, okay, bye.
Exactly.
And it's like, for me, what really, really turned it around for me with bees, because God knows I've stepped on a million when I was a child. I mean, I've been stung way too many times running around barefoot. But it's like, once you really, really see one up close and you see that it's fuzzy, and it really almost becomes, I mean, for me, it's fuzzy. So immediately it's like, oh, it's so cute. You know, like anything.
Most people,
fuzzy.
That is not true. We learned that early with our Save the Bees Fund website, is like, people don't even want to see pictures of bees.
Really?
It's like, ew, an insect. Ew, it's scary. People don't want to see it. It's amazing. I find it amazing.
we're a trip. And I mean, I think part of the problem too is that we're getting more and more distance from our food.
Absolutely.
And I think that that is, I mean, it's like the whole thing when people hear about honey too, and they're like, oh my God, it's bee spit. And it's like, well, kinda, not really.
Have you ever thought about what cheese is?
Oh, I mean, God, right? I mean, let's go to, like, you know, kombucha and beer and all kinds of other creepy things that we all eat. It's like,
that's right.
Seriously, if, you know, if Americans saw three quarters of the way that stuff is made, I don't think that they would eat much. And it's like that there used to be a show on the Food Network, I think it was, that showed you how processed food was made.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'd watch that and be so skeeved out. I was like, I'm never eating gummy bears again. Absolutely. Or whatever it might be. You know, and it's like that's gotten into the American psyche now, where it's like, oh, how cool! It's like, just go eat an orange, okay? Like, some kind of nutrient would be really good for you right now. And so, you were talking about the bees wintering.
Yeah.
So, how long does a normal honeybee live?
So, a normal honeybee, it depends on the season. So, full summer season, when they're really busy and working hard, about 6 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. Really, really short, because they're working their tails off.
Oh my God,
literally.
That's so sad.
It is pretty sad. And then on the in the kind of winter off months, they can live 4 to 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
So like the ones that winter when spring comes, can they still work? Are these like old retired bees?
Well, I mean, they, you know, it's you know, they kind of transition, you know, because they're born quickly. A queen. Queen, you know, lays about 2,000 eggs a day.
Really?
So, you know, it's kind of a constant process, and that reduces during the winter season.
Yeah.
Obviously, everything slows down in the hive, and the hive reduces to about 10,000 bees in a hive, and then some swells in the peak to 50 to 60,000 bees.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I mean, props to the queen. I had no idea. Yeah.
She works hard, but she can live a couple. She lives a few years.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. And over the years, she kind of declines in her ability to produce, which is sad, and then she eventually gets replaced.
And so when she is replaced, is it like a bee thing, you know, like is it like kind of like a bee election, or does just the queen show up and it's like, so, it's mine now, kids?
Right. So if it happens entirely naturally, there's kind of a little bit of that. So you've heard of royal jelly.
Yeah.
And that's what's fed to the queen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gives her special powers.
Cool.
Because everyone else is a woman in the hive too, remember?
That's true.
Right? All the worker bees, I mean, there's the drones, but they don't really count. But there's the worker bees, they're all female. But the queen is the one that gets fed the royal jelly and gives her magic powers of being able to, like, lay them eggs and do her thing. So if a queen were to die off or somehow be removed from the hive, then what happens is the bees actually do kind of, they grow an egg and start, you know, they kind of choose.
Really?
A special egg, and they start feeding it the royal jelly, and she becomes the queen.
Oh my God.
Normally what happens is a beekeeper will find that she's being less productive, and they'll remove the queen and insert a new queen.
And so in those kind of situations, is it a difficult introduction, or can you just kind of throw her in there?
I wouldn't say it's a difficult introduction, but there's an introduction. So they actually will put the new queen inside the hive in kind of a little cage.
Oh, wow.
And the little cage is like a little edible cage that she will eventually kind of gnaw her way out of. Like, it's kind of made out of food, so she gnaws her way out of. But it happens over like a 2-3 day period.
Okay.
So that the bees get used to her scent and used to the fact that, okay, she actually smells like the queen and she is the queen. And by the time she gnaws her way out, she's been accepted into the hive.
This is fascinating.
It is pretty fascinating.
Oh my God. You know, and it's like, it's the same with so many insects. I'm trying to get more insect shows. It's hard to find people to talk about bugs. But it's, they're so organized.
Yeah.
You know, it's organized. Like the goal is there, and insects are like, we're doing it, and this is how we're going to do it. Come hell or high water, we're doing this. And it's, you know, compared to like mammals, where they're like, oh, that would be really nice. Yeah. Ooh, look, something shiny. You know, it's just kind of like, the dedication is not as strong in many cases, especially, you know, with like dogs and cats, for example,
right.
You know, and it's something that I think bees need to get a lot more credit for. And I wish there was a way to get people to reduce their fear in bees, because, I mean, screw the honey. Just the pollination alone is so vital.
So vital.
You know, and it's the thing that people don't get. And it's like, there's a really good image going around, or was going around a couple years ago online, of a supermarket just the produce section, and it was like what you get with bees, and then it was the next picture was what you get without bees, and it was like there was nothing in there.
Right,
it was like,
not much color, right?
Nothing. Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, a stick of rotting celery, and that was about it. And it was like,
that's pretty scary. Well,
that scared the hell out of me. Yeah. I showed that to people. They were like,
can you imagine?
Whatever.
You know, I don't know if you have children or not, but I do, and like, can you imagine like children's life without blueberries or raspberries or peppers or like all these like great nutritional foods that like we much take for granted.
Totally. And then it's like, here, have a bag of Skinny Pop. You know, it's like, no. You know, and it's even, I mean, we are getting so distanced from our food that even like, not even like a super exotic piece of fruit, but something a little unusual. People are like, oh my God, what's that? It's like, it's a muskmelon or, you know, it's spaghetti squash. And it's one of the things that I do is I take people on tours of health food stores and produce stands and stuff. It's staggering. It's staggering. It's like, what's that? That's a Brussels sprout. Ew, I don't like those. My mom used to overcook those. Okay, we're going to get some and try, you know, this kind of thing. Or like,
we're going to get some and not overcook it.
I had a client that couldn't identify a tomato.
Wow.
Full grown man, 52 years old. Did not know what a... he had to have seen one. I mean, it's not like this anomaly, but we went to this fairway, and it was like, what are those? And they were red tomatoes. They weren't even heirloom. They were like your standard tomatoes that you get at McDonald's. It was like, I thought he was kidding, and I started laughing, and he got really mad, and then I was like, oh, God. So he taught me a really good lesson, but... It's so sad that, like, even full-grown adults are getting away from their food sources now and not even knowing where the stuff comes from.
Yeah, it's very true.
And I really appreciate you coming in and talking about this stuff because it's really, really important. I know a lot of people, like, I think the term foodie has killed a lot of the interest in food, sadly. And these small-batch products, working with... whatever it is, the bees or what have you, is super, super important for the environment. It's super important for us nutritionally. And I wish people would start to understand this.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, and to your conversation about, you know, people getting away from food, it's also super important for that conversation of being closer to food, a closer understanding of where food comes from and how it's produced. You know, when people are like, how do you get blueberry honey? I don't understand. Yeah. What do you do to flavor it? And you have the opportunity, you know, this opportunity to explain to them how honey's made and how it works. And how that change happens, you know, I'm privileged to, you know, get to have that conversation with people and see their eyes widen and be like, wow. And their life has changed and they're not going to go back to regular honey.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll question other foods as well.
And that's the thing, too, because, I mean, most people would think like blueberry honey. So you just put like blueberry syrup in there, right? Or, you know, some flavoring.
Time.
It's like, ugh.
All the time. That's always questioned. But, you know, it's like once you taste it and talk them through it, they've learned a phenomenal lesson.
And it's one that they're going to remember, too, which I think is great.
For sure.
It's really, really cool. So you were talking about that you're educating people about honey and about honeybees. Where can we find out more information about all this?
BeeRaw.com.
There you go. Easy enough.
Yeah. Lots of great information there. Lots of really fun products. It's gift Christmas season. Lots of good gifts, people.
And
remember
BeeRaw.
Mom.
Yep. If you guys live in New York, they are at the Union Square Holiday Market. So come by and see them, and then you can try some of this stuff, too. And just even looking at it, I mean... They're beautiful. They're really, really beautiful. And this is, I mean, yes, I love honey, so I'm a little partial. But to actually see five different varieties of honey in their natural state and looking completely different. You could pick these all out. I mean, if I knew which ones they were, I could pick them out in a second. It's not even like, well, if you hold this to the light, it's a little lighter.
Oh, no. They're entirely different.
Amazing.
And they taste entirely different.
It's amazing. It's so cool. So how long have you been doing this?
We've been in business 10 years now.
Really?
Yeah. 10 really great years.
God, that was quick, huh?
Yeah, it goes pretty fast. But yeah, it's a great privilege to be involved in a product that's so good and so unique and so pure and raw and unadulterated, you know. And you know, there's a lot of really simple things about my job and how I do it, and some that are a little more complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and really partnering with my beekeepers and, you know, making them part of the family and knowing that, you know, I'm you know, doing good for the environment, but also doing good for, you know, they're essentially farmers, you know,
yeah.
and they've, you know, the farmers in our country have struggled for years and years since the Industrial Revolution. And it's a really, really tough job.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, for my guys to have the ability for me to pay them a premium to make a premium product so that they don't have to pollinate. You know, they don't have to do the pollination business, so that now they get to stay home, be with their families. They're not traveling to California, and
nice.
They get to be beekeepers making honey as opposed to honey being a byproduct of pollinating almonds.
Right.
It's pretty phenomenal.
That's really cool. And it's also, I'm assuming that this is way less stressful on the bees because the bees can be bees.
For sure.
They're
our
road tripping.
Our beekeepers have far less deaths.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's
far
really
less
cool.
deaths than average commercial beekeeper.
That's the thing. I mean, so at risk of getting, you know, hate mail, is all commercial honey, I mean, it's obviously all commercial honey is way less than cottage industry honeys and stuff like that. But do you think that, like, the large industry honey is doing anything good? I know, right? I'm so sorry for asking you.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I
Fair
don't know
enough.
How to answer that. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, I mean, because if you ask the same question about is big agriculture doing anything that's good?
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, how many billions of people are on this world that we have to feed?
Exactly.
And there's going to be billions of more next year that we have to feed.
That's a good point.
So are they doing something good? I think that they're genuinely trying to feed us. Are they doing that in a way that's sustainable for our health and the planet's health? They're probably not doing it in the best possible manner.
Yeah.
I think that's the big trick that, you know, those of us who really care have to draw attention to and talk about and mm-hmm. do what little we can do. And my small producers, what we can do to, you know, do that better.
Yeah. And it's like, it's one of the things I always think about because, like, in Europe, food prices are much, much higher. Our food in this country is ridiculously cheap compared to everywhere
else. We are addicted to cheap food.
We are addicted to cheap food and we're addicted to crap too. And
cheap food and cheap gas.
Yep. Exactly. And, you know, and because of it, we're getting all kinds of, like, awesome diseases like diabetes and things like that. And so, you know, to eat well in this country, you do have to spend more money. This is, you know, if you're thinking that you can buy, you know, 3 steaks for $5 and that's going to be, like, healthy for your family, it's actually better to go get the beans and rice for $1.29.
I give the beans and rice example so often.
I love
talk
the beans
about
and
like
rice.
A straight up, like, you get your protein, you get your fiber,
yep.
you get, like, everything. You need a little green there, a little color that would be good on
totally.
The side. But, like, beans and rice is, like, awesome.
And it's
you
cheap.
You learn to cook it well, and it's just
That's
as good
thing.
As anything else.
It
too.
Really, really is. And it's $1.29 to feed 120 people.
Exactly.
It's the best, you know. So it's like, you know, when people ask me, like, how do I eat well without breaking my bank? It's things like beans and rice once in a while, you
yep.
know. And then it enables me to buy top quality ingredients.
Yep.
And I can, you know, eat less because
Look,
it's
you
higher
eat
nutrients.
Beans and rice a couple times a week, and you're going to afford a really good steak at the end
no
of the week.
No kidding, right? Exactly. Or, you know, a vacation. Or whatever it may be that you're so interested in and want to do. So I guess what is the one thing that you've learned doing this that's really just blown your mind?
Wow. I mean, I get pretty privileged with, you know, a lot of the details we've talked about are privileged to me. But I think, you know, the thing that just warms my heart the most is, you know, when I have the chance to be in front of someone like you or someone less knowledgeable than you and get them to taste a couple of different honeys
mm-hmm.
and get that just like warming, like, wow, you know, that goes across their face and like the oohs and the ahs and, you know, like I had no idea. And, you know, just the privilege of getting people, you know, just warmed up to something that's so different, so unique, so nice and lovely and good. That's just always a joy, and that never gets old.
And the thing that's so awesome about it, too, is when you're educating about the honey, they're learning about the bees, and so they're getting more empathy for the bees.
Yes.
And that's a gorgeous cycle. And it's
yeah.
a nice way to do it, too, because then it's not – it's friendly. You know, it's like, oh, no, you shouldn't do that, because so many people in nutrition and food production are like, oh, no, no, no. And it's like, oh, I don't like you anymore. I'm not going
right.
to listen to you anymore.
Just take it down a notch, people. You don't have to be so serious.
Like, exactly.
Food is wonderful. Food is beautiful. Like, take it easy.
Seriously, just enjoy it and, you know, share it with your friends, and then we're good. Oh, Zeke, we are out of time, but I have really, I've learned so much. Thank you so much.
I'm glad.
Really, really enjoyed this.
It's been a lot of fun.
I've really dug this. You guys need to get to the Union Square Market or go to the website. What's your website?
Brawa.com.
Easy peasy.
BEERAW.com.
Tons of stuff on the website. Really beautiful, really clean. It's a nice site.
Thank you.
Yes, I was researching that one until I thought I was on the wrong site. So I really do feel like an ass. So again, I totally apologize. I'll fix that all up. And for everybody else, I want to say thank you guys so much for listening. I couldn't be doing this without y'all. This is the last live episode of the season, but I will be back in January, so don't miss me too much. We've got all the episodes on iTunes. I've got them on Stitcher. We've got them on the Heritage Radio website. I'm all over the place. You can find me on Twitter at Food Healer. You can find me on Instagram. It is either Brooklyn Celia or Animal Instinct, Heritage Radio Animal Instinct, sorry. And I am also on Facebook with an Animal Instinct page. You can find me under the logo. And so if you want to keep up to date on all things animal, please join all those. Tell your friends about the show. And I will be back in January with a whole new season. Again, thank you guys for listening. I couldn't do this without you. And I hope you all have a very happy holiday. And Zeke, thank you so much for taking time out.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'll see you at Union Square.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.